Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Bryan's!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. Got Evan on the board. E, how we doing on this? A little dreary
Tuesday afternoon.
It is a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday. Happy Valentine's Day, my friend.
Oh my goodness, great. Thank you so much. Happy Valentine's Day.
You got any big plans with the missus this evening?
Yes. I'm on the radio. And life is exciting. We're doing many cool things.
Did you guys have Valentine's Day brunch together before the
show? Well, we had brunch, you know, with Zelda, of course.
There you go.
Zelda's our puppy. And it was wonderful.
Good.
The celebrations were jubilant.
Glad to hear it, man. Glad to hear it. And we appreciate you for your hard work here on the board. If you want to give a call, share a tangent with me on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media, coming to you at your local Civic Media stations around the state, Lake Air in Amory, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, and broadcasting here in Madison from the Solidarity Realty Studios for Mad Radio 92.7 FM WMDX 1580 AM. And you can find all the excellent Civic Media stations on our website, civicmedia.us. Coming up later in the big show this Tuesday afternoon, going to be joined at 2:20 by Executive Director of Dane by Local, Colin Murray. Going to be talking about Coffee Fest. 1 week from today, Dane by Local putting on their annual Coffee Fest here in Madison. Colin will be joining us to talk about that event and some terrific Buy Local bus tours that Dane by Local will be putting on throughout the year 2023. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that conversation. And at 2:30, going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to recombobulate with Dan. We got a ton of news coming out of Milwaukee. We got the state Supreme Court primary and the whole spring primary across the state of Wisconsin. Coming up next Tuesday, 1 week from today, so we'll talk about those headlines with Dan at 2:30, hopefully recombobulate, get a little Bucks details as well from Dan, and have a just all-around great conversation. So jam-packed show today. If you want to share a tangent, get it in early, 844-967-2789. It is Valentine's Day today. Looking forward to a peaceful evening. It's going to be a nice dinner out, hopefully, and wishing this rain will just go away. But we're going to dive into these headlines, get into some of the things around the nation going on, a couple of quick things, items that we discussed here on Dueling Tangents in the past and want to share before we dive into our lead story this Tuesday afternoon. Dianne Feinstein, U.S. Senator out of California, announced earlier today she will not be seeking re-election in 2024, so that will set up a pretty crowded, I imagine, Democratic primary to replace Senator Feinstein on her way out, but not seeking re-election, Dianne Feinstein of California to the U.S. Senate. Tangentially to U.S. Senate hopefuls, Alex Lazary, former Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate this last go-around, announced that he is not leaving Wisconsin. Wisconsin will be his home. He is planning to remain in Wisconsin despite news coming out over the past couple of days that his father is looking to sell his portion of the Milwaukee Bucks ownership. Alex Lazary, though, saying Wisconsin is home. He is raising his daughter here. He and his wife will not be leaving, and he started a new PAC, a political action committee, today. So Alex Lazary not leaving Wisconsin, looking to invest in startup candidates at the local level, mayors and so forth around the state of Wisconsin. And that is what Alex Lazary is going to be up to next. But Evan, this is where this one caught my eye, and I think is a continued subject that we wanted to keep in the headlines here in the Madison area for those folks who are unaware. The UW nurses, UW Health Nurses, have been looking to be recognized as a union since 2019. And we got an update today here in Dane County that the Wisconsin Supreme Court will not hear an expedited review of a case that was before the state's Employment Relations Board, saying that it was up to this, up to the discretion of UW Health whether or not they could voluntarily recognize this union. This piece over at the Cap Times headlined, UW Health Union Dispute Won't Get Wisconsin Supreme Court Review. And this is written up by Jesse Apoyan over at the Cap Times. And Evan, that's it's a little bit of a tricky headline, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We've had these nurses on our station before. Granted, it was before the changes, before the brand change. You know, it was early last year, I believe.
Yeah, and last fall, the representatives of the UW Nurses United, I believe, is the organizing name for the nurses through SEIU Healthcare Wisconsin, I believe. And so they've been previously on with the Devil's Advocates. I know that they've appeared on a couple of other shows as well. But this has been a long go-around attempt. And this headline, I think, leads a little bit of confusion still. So I want to clarify it and talk about this issue. Because essentially, the management at UW Health was seeking to have an expedited review by the state Supreme Court, not going through the regular order of judicial review of their case, essentially. They wanted to take it right away to the highest court, and the state Supreme Court refused to hear the case this way. But there is still an ongoing court issue here in Dane County Court, so this is not the end-all, be-all of the decision. But reading from the piece over at the Cap Times, written up by Jesse Apoyan, the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission ruled in November that UW Health nurses cannot legally obtain mandatory union recognition and require the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics Authority to engage in collective bargaining. What remained unresolved by that decision was whether UW Health can voluntarily recognize the union, a question UW Health asked the state Supreme Court to rule on. Since 2019, nurses at UW Health have sought to form a union with the help from SEIU Healthcare Wisconsin. Their last union contract expired in 2014. At that time, UW Health said that Act 10, a 2011 state law, which effectively eliminated collective bargaining rights for most public employees, barred it from negotiating a new contract with the union. Nurses have countered that hospital management as an independent body rather than a government could voluntarily recognize and bargain with their union. So, Evan, that's at the core of it, what is still to be determined from this lawsuit. So, as I mentioned, UW Health was who petitioned the state's highest court to hear their case, and the state Supreme Court ruled that they would not take it up. There is a dispute still here in the county court, and so this will be reviewed through normal order, it seems like. But the question that it boils down to is whether or not, as a private organization, the healthcare management at UW hospitals can voluntarily recognize a union. Because they're essentially saying their hands are tied.
Yeah.
Act 10 is preventing us from being able to recognize you as a union, whereas really, it just prevents the mandatory recognition of a union. It doesn't say that the body can't voluntarily recognize.
Well, here in Wisconsin, you have a right to work.
Yeah, under the former Walker administration, that was legislation passed by Governor Walker that he said he wasn't going to pursue if reelected. Evan, it was one of those weird ones where he promised the trades unions that he would not go. It was just the teachers unions. It was the public unions that he was looking to bust, not all unions. And then once reelected and put his sights on running for president, he made Wisconsin a right to work state.
It set the tone, though. You know, it set the tone.
Yeah. Yeah. The anti-labor tone that was set by the former Walker administration, very similar to how we now are, as a state, are uncertain what the law is here in the state of Wisconsin surrounding healthcare for abortion services. Without clarity of whether or not it's the 1849 law or whether or not it's the subsequent laws that were passed, like during the Walker administration, that limited abortion to 20 weeks. You couldn't do it beyond 20 weeks. And so there is confusion there, but the tone set, the anti-labor tone, the anti-abortion tone, leaves the questions to be answered by the legal system, and the state's highest court will not be directly intervening on behalf of UW Health For this one, it is going to see a regular process through the judicial review. And just the hopes are still alive. Wanted to read a couple of quotes from the UW Health Nurses United. In a statement, they praise the court's decision to reject the petition and accuse UW Health of trying to, quote, circumvent the regular legal process by filing directly at the Supreme Court to try to take advantage of a conservative majority. Since reaching the September agreement, nurses, quote, have established a strong union voice at UW Health and through discussions with administrators reached agreements on pay increases and the implementation of a peer support process for disciplinary proceedings, they said.
I wonder what the argument is that they can't.
They're just trying to say that it's illegal. They're saying that they can't voluntarily recognize it because Act 10 prevents them from.
Wow.
Is my understanding.
Certainly sets the tone.
Again, it sets the tone. But it seems that, again, all stories here in Wisconsin right now relate back to this state Supreme Court race that is coming up with a spring primary next week, 7 days from today, and the spring general that will be taking place on April 4th, where the two top candidates from next week's primary will go head-to-head to see who will get a 10-year term on the state's highest court. And so we got a piece talking about how Wisconsin Supreme Court is already expected to top $6 million in spending, and that's just the primary. So it is going to be an expensive race, already almost exceeding $6 million spent to get one of the two continuing on seats. We'll continue to have that conversation, give those headlines. But coming up next, we're going to be talking with Colin Murray of Dane by Local Coffee Fest here, presented by Dane by Local, taking place next week Tuesday as well. It's going to be busy Tuesday, but Colin's going to be joining us to talk about Coffee Fest, talk about the Buy Local bus tours that have been put on so far. The first one this past weekend by Dane by Local, highlighting local businesses around the Madison area and Dane County area proper. Folks, if you want to share a tangent, still plenty of time to do so, but going to be joined as well by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation area coming up at 2:30 after the conversation with Colin Murray and Dane by Local. If you want to share that tangent, you can call or text 844-967-2789. Follow Dueling Tangents on Twitter. You can get updates about all of the shows, see the important headlines that we're following at Dueling Tangents on Twitter. We'll be right back. Just close your eyes and sing for me.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, and thrilled to be joined now by the executive director of Dane by Local, Colin Murray. Colin, how are you doing this Tuesday afternoon?
I am great, Luke. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And happy Valentine's Day to you. We have you here on Valentine's Day for 1 week from today promoting Dane by Local's Coffee Fest, the annual event held by Dane by Local to promote local businesses and all get together and have a cup of coffee. And in looking for some musical taste to bring us in and out of this segment, I did not know Frank Sinatra has a whole song about coffee.
Hey, good job.
It works out perfect. It was the exact theme that I was looking to have for our conversation. So Colin, for those who are not familiar with Coffee Fest, can you tell us a little bit about the event that Dane by Local puts on and who will all be there next week?
Yeah, so Coffee Fest is something we've been doing. I think this is now year number 5 or 6. We tried to keep it going through the pandemic. That was a bit of a challenge, as you can imagine. So this is presented by Easy Office Products. They've been the sponsor from the beginning. We appreciate that. And this year we are at the Lexus of Madison location, which is actually in Middleton, on Airport Road. So they clear out the showroom, which is a very nice showroom, I might say. You can imagine being a Lexus dealership. But they clear all that out. We get to take over the space, and we bring in about 30 vendors that are all somehow related to coffee in one form or another. So lots of opportunities for sampling, checking out various brews, But beyond that, also bakery items. I think there's a chocolatier that'll be there. So we'll have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. A couple of new things that we have this year. We have a mindful morning. So, you know, coffee first thing in the morning gets you up and going, right? But there's other things with that, like just getting into your day and getting started. So Group Health Cooperative is sponsoring the Mindful Morning, and they'll be doing some easy, easy classes. So very interactive. If you want to participate, that's great. You just want to watch, that's fine too. But they'll have that every half hour through the event that you can go there. And then we've also got the Middleton High School band. I think we've got a quartet that's actually coming, and they'll be performing through the venue as well. So some new things taking place there. Just to mix it up a little bit.
Fantastic. I was in the high school band myself, and I got to, I didn't get to perform at anything like a coffee fest event style, but there was a grand opening of a Dunkin' Donuts we once played at when that happened in the, for my high school. So some new added features, mindfulness, morning mindfulness, and the Middleton band joining Dan by Local and Easy Office Products putting on Coffee Fest. This is taking place next Tuesday, Colin. If people want to learn more or purchase tickets, where can they go to find out more information about the event?
Yeah, so it's real easy. It's just go to our website. It's right there on the homepage, right in the middle of the page, danebylocal.com. Remember, buy is B-U-Y. So danebylocal.com is right there. You can pay right online and get your tickets. There are some deals for packages of tickets as well.
Perfect. And what time is the event taking place next Tuesday?
Starts at 7 a.m. and goes till 10 a.m. So it's an early morning deal. You can do it on your way to work.
There you go. And that's the perfect time for coffee. I mean, by 10 a.m., I think I'm usually through about a pot of coffee myself. But that's what it requires me to get going in the mornings. But Dane by Local putting on Coffee Fest, sponsored by Easy Office Products, next Tuesday, February 21st. From 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Lexus of Madison, which is really, really off Airport Road in Middleton. But outside of Coffee Fest, Dane by Local is also putting on some great other by local events throughout the year of 2023. This past Sunday being the first by local bus tour. What can you tell us a little bit more about those events, Colin?
Yeah, so we've got a series of bus trips that we'll be doing around Madison, and it's exposing our local businesses. So the last one were all boutiques for women to check out and go to. Galentine was what it was called. Tiny was Valentine. was fun, and lots of positive comments back on that. So we start at Delta Beer Lab. We go whatever route of the theme is for that particular day, and then come back to Delta Beer Lab and have a beer and pizza party there. So that's all included in the ticket price, the transportation, a goodie bag. There's a lapel pin, special discounts at each of the stops. So the next one, March 22nd, is all things related to food. So if you like food, like unusual experiences with food, this will be the thing for you. So you can see the list of participating businesses on our website and get tickets there as well.
Fantastic. And that website again is danebybylocal.com. And if you want to stay tuned with everything that Dane by Local is doing and the Buy Local movement here in Madison and the surrounding area, Let's Get Local airs every Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m., hosted by Jason Hafeman here on Civic Media. And Jason does a terrific job interviewing the small business owners. I know he does a tremendous work promoting what they're doing and the efforts that Dane by Local is doing as well. So, folks, if you are not currently tuning in on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., you need to be doing so, because you get to hear about this excellent work that Dane by Local, Colin and Jason and everybody on the team are working on. One more time for the listening audience, Colin, where can they go to find the details and all the vendor lists and all of the fun things will be taking place at Lexus of Madison next Tuesday and going forward throughout 2023?
Yeah, so Coffee Fest presented by Easy Office Products, danebylocal.com. And then we've got the bus tour, Shop Local Tour is what we call it. That's actually presented by Madison Top Company. Don't want to forget that. And they are Again, on the website there, gamebylocal.com, to get tickets to that.
Fantastic, Colin. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this Tuesday afternoon. Really looking forward to the event next week, and wish you the best. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Great. Thanks, Luke. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Folks, you were listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. Going to be joined next by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. Going to be talking all Milwaukee headlines and some of these proposals coming out of the Evers administration before tomorrow's budget address. Stay tuned. You can share a tangent, 844-967-2789.
Hey, Pedro. Get a flashlight. I cannot find the sugar.
Said I'm pulling down the shades for the long ride. I never knew that I could feel so black and blue. And I've been holding on to something now for some time.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. If you want to share a tangent with us here on this Tuesday afternoon, 844-967-2789. I want to thank again Colin Murray, Executive Director of Dane by Local. Very excited to be attending next week's Coffee Fest hosted by Dane by Local next Tuesday, February 21st. That is primary day as well, folks, so make sure to get out and make a plan to be a voter in next Tuesday's primary. But now joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area to get recombobulated on all the different headlines that are coming out of Wisconsin today. Dan, how you doing on this Tuesday afternoon?
Doing well, Luke. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, appreciate you joining me here. And we'll get to a piece that you put out recently about next week's primary. But before then, tomorrow, we are going to get a budget address from Governor Tony Evers. And over the past several days, we've just seen a not really a leak, because there are so many different proposals that are getting floated. I believe you referred to it as a flood of proposals. And the earliest one this morning, kind of grabbing a lot of headlines, $290 million proposal for improving the Brewers American Family Field. What are your thoughts on what's going on with this provision included by Evers announced earlier today?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by this one, you know, popping up in the old inbox this morning from the governor's office. You know, and with the plan to commit a big dollar amount to the Milwaukee Brewers to keep the team in the city through 2043. I think their current lease at American Family Field runs through 2030. This plan, which commits $290 million, would keep the team in Milwaukee through 2043, and would kind of go towards a lot of the maintenance and upgrades and things like that that are needed. It's a pretty interesting one, because when you think back to the Bucks Arena deal from a number of years ago I covered that quite a bit when I was back at Milwaukee Magazine. Mm-hmm. And you know, that involved so much planning and discussions and debate and all that in the years before the plan was initially unveiled. And this one just kind of drops in as a potential part of the state budget. Now we have this $7 billion surplus now that allows the state to make investments in a way that might not have, close to a decade ago when the Fiserv Forum deal was getting hammered out. But a pretty interesting one. You know, we've at the Recombobulation Area, we've been covering a whole lot of the issues surrounding American Family Field with the proposed expansion of I-94, the proposed reimagining of the stadium freeway, and some other ideas that have been floating around about, you know, creating a potential quote unquote beer district.
Yeah.
Kind of modeling it after what's happened in the Deer District downtown around the Bucks Arena, and some opportunities that were around the stadium. So urban planner Robin Palm wrote a piece for us at the Recombobulation Area last year, talking about how, you know, creating some development around the field might be a way to raise the revenue necessary to go towards these long-term improvements at the stadium without coming to taxpayers. And I think, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how this conversation unfolds going forward with the Brewers, because this is a different type of proposal than what we saw for the Bucks years back.
Yeah, and I believe last year some eyebrows were raised when Brewers ownership brought forward the number that I believe at the time was around $100 million to improve the stadium, and that figure raised eyebrows. This is about three times that now, and if it brings a beer district to the area surrounding American Family Field, I think I can get on board. But if this is just, you know, the public financing of things that the ownership just doesn't want to kind of dole out the funds to upgrade the stadium, I'm a little less all in. Like, I'm a little bit more reserved if it that's what this proposal is. So I'm going to be interested to see how this continues to develop. It seems like there's going to be some kind of mixed skin in the game to see how, from my understanding, the funding would work. But this is one, I think, you've already got feigned outrage from the leader of the assembly, Robin Voss, saying, well, why did the governor drop this bomb and not talk to any of us here over at the legislature before including it, like he hasn't thrown out the budget proposals that Evers has given the last two times around and just started from scratch anyways. What are your thoughts on the response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss this morning?
Yeah, it's just the typical Voss political posturing when it comes to any type of this. He was mad about the proposal that Evers introduced last week about, you know, shared revenue, saying it was copying a Republican idea that he wants credit for. He seems to be upset about, you know, Evers dropping this news that could be, you know, funding from a fraction of the surplus, and I get it, and it's just, you know, it's part of what he has to do, but it also, you know, he didn't rule anything out either, so it's you know, I think it's going to be a part of the budget discussions going forward. One of the great many things that I'm sure will lead to a lot more political posturing from the Assembly Speaker as Tony Evers unveils the full budget in his address tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're getting leaks of those political posturings as well, not just getting all the outrage at once when the address is had tomorrow. And it will be interesting to see everything that is going to be included in that budget address by Governor Tony Evers at the kickoff of his second term. One of the other proposals we know will be included is a $1.2 billion tax cut proposal amid record budget surplus. That's according to reporting over at Wisconsin Public Radio. Dan, this $1.2 billion looking targets middle class and lower income individuals receiving this tax cut. But what are your thoughts on the proposed $1.2 billion in tax cuts for many, many Wisconsinites in Evers' latest proposal as well?
Yeah, it's really draws a pretty clear contrast to the proposals that the Republicans have been putting out on tax reform in recent months. You know, they said back during the campaign that they were not campaigning on a potential flat tax. And then as soon as the campaign was over, all of a sudden they were all bringing forth the flat tax, which in Wisconsin would mean a massive tax cut to the wealthiest tax bracket in particular. And I think, you know, that this tax cut that Evers is proposing is much more in line of what is actually going to make an impact for the middle class in the state of Wisconsin. And I think also, you know, he also included a number of kind of targeted tax cuts as well. You know, one called the Family and Individual Reinvestment Tax Cut, that kind of goes to the 10% that he was referencing, but there's also a child and dependent care tax credit that would be expanded, create a new caregiver tax credit for people requiring providing care or support to adult family members. And then there's other targeted tax credits for seniors, for veterans, There's a proposal to make sure that student debt relief is not taxed, which is something that Republicans wanted to do. The only taxes that they really like are, yeah. are you know, those types of things.
Wisconsin, one of the few states that wasn't going to forgive the taxes on the federal student loans forgiven by the Biden administration if that were to go through after it's upheld in the current courts. But the recombobulation area took some flack for tying the Michaels campaign and just the Republicans in general here in Wisconsin to the flat tax last year. It is interesting to see the contrast of Republicans circling the wagons around a flat tax and this being the alternative being provided by Governor Tony Evers.
Yeah, a piece at the recombobulation area by Marquette professor Phil Rocco broke down how a flat tax might work, because that proposal was floated by Tim Michaels and backed by Tim Michaels in the campaign. And then when we wrote about it as something that Tim Michaels wanted to do, they said, "Oh, we're not endorsing that." And then as soon as the election was over, they all of the
Devin LeMahieu was like, "Yeah, let's do that."
Endorse that. And you know, one thing that I saw Republicans very upset about with Governor Evers' tax proposal is a cap on the manufacturing portion of the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit, which is a kind of a reform that has flown under the radar from the Walker era. And this basically is a huge tax cut that is tilted towards large manufacturers, and it does not require any job creation or any incentives. It's basically just a giveaway to large manufacturers in the state. And you know, I think there's been a lot of research done on this. You can't even find how much money is going towards each company with this tax credit. So I think capping that it is a smart move by the governor as a way to kind of reform the tax code going forward for small businesses that would be more in favor of small businesses. He included a number of small business friendly tax reforms in this proposal as well.
Yeah, roughly, I want to say the number around the ballpark of 75% of filers claiming the manufacturer and agriculture tax credit were millionaires in Wisconsin in recent years. So it definitely goes disproportionately to the wealthiest tax earners in the state. And I think a cap on that would be something that could be beneficial to the state and be a better steward of the tax dollars. Because, yeah, if I recall correctly as well, the Family Foundation for Senator Ron Johnson uses the manufacturing agriculture tax credit for the Family Foundation's taxes, which to me doesn't sound anything like a manufacturer or anything in the agricultural field. So, yeah, it's a little strange that a family trust would be using that for tax benefits.
Yeah, there's a lot of loopholes. And yeah. It's an area that certainly needs reform. Now, will the Republicans probably toss that? That might be the first thing that they toss in the garbage.
That might be the ceremonial first page proposals. Just ripped up.
Because you're seeing, you know, folks like the a lot of people from like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce out there tweeting about how bad this would be to, you know, have businesses pay their fair share.
But, or at least have to prove that they provided job growth to receive the tax benefits. Because currently, in its iteration, it does not even require any proof of job creation. And there's also plenty of other things, as you pointed out, small business tax programs in the Evers proposal and the historic investment in education. Kicking off earlier today in the piece that I was reading, Evers put out that trope that budgets are a reflection of your priorities, and the Evers administration's priorities all along have been education. He marked himself that he would be the education governor, former Department of Public Instruction secretary here in Wisconsin, and former principal and teacher himself, very invested in improving Wisconsin schools. The Evers budget proposal I saw puts $2.6 billion investing into new Wisconsin K-12 funding. And so that would be pretty transformative as well to use our budget surplus. Again, north of $7 billion to invest in K-12 education here in Wisconsin. I know we're going to a break, but any quick thoughts on the education proposals in there as well, Dan?
Yeah, pretty significant increase, about a 17% increase in K-12 spending. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal. I think this is going to be one of the big fights in the budget coming up.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that's going to be the one that Evers goes to the mat for over and over and over again, because that at the baseline has been a core goal of his, is middle-class tax cuts and increase in education funding. And I have a feeling those two things are going to be what the Evers administration is going to be fighting for tooth and nail when it comes to the budget negotiations that are going to be upon us. But before those budget negotiations, yes, we get the budget addressed tomorrow night. But next Tuesday, we've got a statewide spring primary with the Wisconsin Supreme Court on the ballot. We're going to talk about that and one of my favorite topics to discuss with Dan, the Milwaukee Bucks. Coming up after this break, if you want to share a tangent, 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I am Luke Mathers, joined on this Tuesday afternoon by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. And Dan, a piece that you had out at the Recombobulation Area last week, right? It's Tuesday, so it wasn't this week. Last week's piece, picked up as well by the Heartland Signal. But folks, you should go subscribe on Substack to the Recombobulation Area and read it there. Talking about the ramifications of the state Supreme Court primary that is on the ballot next Tuesday, 1 week from today, and just recombobulating in general around that race. With a week out, Dan, you got any extra insight or what are your thoughts on 7 days from now where Wisconsinites are going to be going to the polls?
Yeah, it's hard to believe we're already this close to this close to the primary. You know, there's a lot of voting fatigue in the state of Wisconsin after how intense and high profile the race for governor and senator and all up and down the ballot was last fall. But I think, you know, this is an incredibly important race. People keep mentioning it. There was a piece in The Guardian yesterday. UW Madison professor saying the stakes are monstrous was the quote that he had out there. And it's really true. This really has a huge opportunity to kind of reset politics in the state of Wisconsin through the state Supreme Court race. And so I wrote about, you know, kind of the state of the campaign as we get close to this primary here. And I think, you know, you have the two liberal candidates and the two conservative candidates. And I think there's a lot more happening on the right with these two candidates, with former state Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly and Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro, you know, really going at each other, or really more Daniel Kelly and his backers going after Doro in a way that you don't necessarily always see on the same ideological side of the fence. And so Kelly has really been going after Doro, and, you know, in a number of different ways. And, you know, he has some Uline funding backing him, and another anti-choice group that came out to back him as well in a story that I saw today. So he has some big dollar backings, and I think Doro does as well. But I think it's, you know, the back and forth that we've seen between those two camps has really ramped up over the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, when Jennifer Doro initially announced, you know, given the name recognition that she had coming off of the Waukesha parade trial, you know, really made me think that she was the likely winner for the on the conservative side for this race. But now I'm not so sure. I think, you know, the attacks from Kelly have really ramped up. There was a decision from Kelly supporter Shelley Grogan yesterday calling a decision from Doro quote unquote unlawful on a 5-time drunk driving case.
Yeah, saying it was too lenient of a decision, I believe, by Judge Doro.
Right. Yeah. So I think there is, you know, some real back and forth. And I think it's interesting to see from Doro too. You know, they all the candidates have done interviews with like PBS and with Upfront here at WISN here in Milwaukee. Doro had her interviews run over the weekend, and she just really doesn't have a whole lot to say in any of these interviews. It's really hard to tell what her message is. It just seems like she's trying to play it extremely safe. You know, say she's the type of judge that will follow the law, not try to wade into any of these fights. But it's just you can't only do that for so long. And at a certain point, you need to have some sort of message. And I just don't know what exactly her message is going to be in this campaign. So it's been a lot of back and forth. And I think, you know, her star has certainly dimmed in the last couple months of this campaign.
And do you believe that's kind of a page right out of the Tim Michaels playbook, where you don't talk a whole lot, you don't do a whole lot of media appearances, and you just hope that the name recognition from that trial last fall and the paid advertising that she's doing around the state is going to be enough to get her across the finish line next week?
Yeah, that seems like what they're banking on. And I think the fact that, you know, Daniel Kelly is not a good candidate, and he is, you know, he lost by a pretty wide margin when last time he ran for a full 10-year term. And he is the type of candidate that, you know, I think the left will see blood in the water on. And there's a lot to go after him on as you get into the type of general election that we're going to be seeing. But at the same time, it's like, are you more worried about Jennifer Doro, you know, perhaps winning back some of those suburban voters that have been going towards Democratic backed candidates in recent elections? Or are you worried about a Daniel Kelly who's backed by Uline money? And we just saw the impact that Uline money can have on a race when they more or less, you know, move the needle in a really big way. Mm-hmm. For Ron Johnson, you know, there was no kind of equivalent to the near $30 million in super PAC funding that they put to back Ron Johnson at a really key point in the race last year. So I think, you know, for a liberal candidate, and it looks like it is probably going to be Janet Protasiewicz, who would emerge from the primary. She has a ton of momentum right now. And, you know, who would she rather face? I don't really know the answer to that one right now.
Yeah, and this race is going to set spending records for a state Supreme Court race. Already north of $6 million spent, and the primary is still a week away. Folks, if you have not yet made a plan to be a voter, next week, Tuesday, February 21st, all Wisconsinites go into the polls for at least the state Supreme Court race, but there are also local elections up and down the ballot, depending on where you live. So go to myvote.wi.gov, make a plan, be a voter next Tuesday, February 21st. And Dan, here before the end of the show, I'd be remiss if we didn't get at least a little Bucks content in. Tonight, Boston Celtics are in town. What are your thoughts on this one? It seems like the starters for the Celtics are kind of all using today as a, well, we don't want to go up against the longest win streak in the NBA currently. We might take a rest day. What's going on with that?
Yeah, looks like a lot of their starters are sitting there afraid to come into Milwaukee and face Giannis and the Bucks on their 10-game winning streak. No, I think it's just probably they probably don't want to show their hand a little bit, you know. Yeah. I think there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on between the two likely favorites to come out of the Eastern Conference, the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks.
I mean, tonight's game could have implications on the one seed in the East, though. Wouldn't you want to try to do everything you could to put that away?
It's true. It's true. And you know, the Celtics had Game 7 at home last fall in their series against the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there is some incentive for the Bucks to maybe try and, you know, notch a win here and keep this winning streak going and maybe push for that one seed at some point.
I'm just glad that they're back from the West Coast, because I can't handle those 9 p.m. starts, man. Those 9 p.m. tip-offs were killing me last week. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. If you are not already subscribed to the Recombobulation Area, do so. Really appreciate you joining me on this Tuesday afternoon. I almost said Wednesday afternoon. I don't know what day it is, Dan, but really appreciate it. I'll hope to have you back on the show soon. Folks, if you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. Dueling Tangents will be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. for a Wednesday edition. Talk to y'all then.